Our first speaker will be Amy Lischko, the Director of Health Care and Finance Policy for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Amy Lischko.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. For those of you that didn't get a copy of the handouts, we'll be happy to give you some of those later. I'm going to zip through these anyway. Many of you I know have heard Massachusetts presented by a number of different people what our reform plans are, and I'll try to go into a little more detail regarding implementation and also some of the key features that I think are applicable to New York or that could be brought into New York, because New York has a lot of similarities to Massachusetts. I was reminded as I was sitting listening to the first panel, it gets a little depressing when you're at these conferences hearing about all the problems and that there's no easy solution. And I read in the Wall Street Journal this morning that the power of positive thinking is coming back again, and it's something that we should all use for our psychological health. So I'm going to try to think that we've solved all the problems here in Massachusetts, even though I know deep down in my heart we've only just begun. So let me see. Okay, so why healthcare reform in Massachusetts? And this is where I think you can see some similarities with New York State. We're seeing the increases in our premiums. We're one of the more expensive states, as is New York. So we just know that this can't keep going on. I know that Kaiser will be coming out with its survey for premium growth. And I know that it's tapered a little bit, but I still think that we're seeing these double-digit premium growth that just can't keep continuing on and on. We have a relatively low number of uninsured. I know, according to the CPS, that Minnesota ranks lowest, but according to our state data, Massachusetts is actually one of the lower states in the country. Our recent state survey showed that this number's come down by about 100,000. So in 2006, we're at about 372,000 uninsured. We know that increasingly small businesses, very small businesses, they're becoming really where many people work in our state and in many states, and individuals are really facing significant barriers. So that was something that we saw as being a big problem in Massachusetts. As far as market reforms, we saw that there was relatively little information about getting the healthcare market moving. People didn't have access to good, easy-to-access data on quality and costs, and I think that's true across the state, although we're seeing some innovations in that area. We also had some unique situational issues that were going on in Massachusetts. We had a big potential loss of about $385 million from the federal government, so they helped push us along on this reform path because we stood to lose quite a bit of federal funding if we didn't do something quick. We also had some universal health care ballot initiatives that voters were likely to vote in the future for ensuring access to health insurance for everyone in the state. Those were a threat that was hanging over the legislators as they moved in their discussions with health care reform. And we also had this uncompensated care pool, which was a funding mechanism in our state, which was both a good thing for us because we already had an assessment on insurers, employers, and hospitals, but it was also a bad thing because it was this big black box that was just money was thrown into it, and people were able to access care, and we didn't really manage it very well. We didn't really know what people were getting, and the box was just getting bigger and bigger. This is just a quick picture. I'm going to focus primarily on the two innovations, which was Commonwealth Care and then affordable private insurance. Those are the two areas that I'll talk about mostly today. This is kind of hard to see, but these were the building blocks to our healthcare system. Some of the reforms we did in the insurance market, we had a pretty dysfunctional individual market. There were only largely two products available, either a full boat Cadillac product or a product with a high deductible. Individuals that purchased in that market were really high-risk pool individuals. They were people who really needed health insurance. They were a very sick population. It was getting smaller and smaller every year. It was just a spiraling out of control. We had any willing provider laws that allowed basically every health plan had every provider in their health plan, so managed care was gone. I know New York still has more of a limited network plans that are available, but in Massachusetts, those were really going by the wayside. We had no consequences for lifestyle choices, so we included in our new market reforms, we included a tobacco usage add-on, so insurers can add a surcharge for people who smoke. We had hard cutoffs for dependent status. Now kids can stay on their policy, not as long as they can in New Jersey, but they can stay on until they're 25. That wasn't really a favorite of mine, but that was something that people felt strongly about. I felt that it was more important to get people into insurance to look for a job right out of college with insurance, because that's an important value for them to establish early on, but others felt differently about that. The insurance products that are going to be marketed to the above 300% of the FPL, so people with moderate incomes, are not bare-bone policies. They're going to be policies that have all your basic coverage, but they are going to have some value-driven networks. They're going to be tighter networks than are currently available in the market. They're going to have some deductibles. This is, again, for the above 300% of the FPL. They're going to have moderate copays, so they're not going to be paying nothing when you go see your primary care doc. There's going to be some copayment involved, and they're going to drop the premiums, we expect, by probably about 50%. Sorry. The connector is what allows for the product to be sold, and I know Dr. Bond talked about this earlier. It's really, the governor actually had called it an exchange. It was renamed the connector. They sort of sound like dating services to me, both of them. But this was what you had heard about as an exchange, and the Heritage Foundation has also been worked with us on this issue, which is a place where people can come to purchase their health insurance, both small businesses and individuals. But when you come to the exchange, you actually have a variety of products you can choose from, and it makes it easier for small employers to be able to offer their employees a variety of products as opposed to just getting the product that the small business owner has for himself or has selected. We found that small employers tend not to be very sophisticated or educated around health insurance decisions, and also one size doesn't fit all for any employer, and that it's not fair for you to try to attract all your employees into one product. So the exchange really facilitates that the choice among employees. Now, we're only offering it to small employers. We mandate small employers to purchase health insurance through this mechanism. And it's also only small employers. Employers over 50 cannot purchase through the connector. The other thing that the connector does, and here's just a little picture of what it looks like, is it allows for people with part-time jobs, multiple part-time jobs, to bring either a small subsidy from their part-time employer to the connector and merge those subsidies together, or it also allows for the pre-tax payment of the premium. So most people purchasing it on their own in the individual market pay with post-tax dollars unless they're individually sole proprietors. But if they're working for an employer that doesn't offer, they're paying with post-tax dollars. What the exchange does is it allows the person to purchase with pre-tax dollars. The other nifty thing is if you have two spouses that both work for small employers who decide to purchase through the exchange, granted it'll take a little while for that to happen and for you to actually have that mechanism work, but that couple could then choose the plan that works for them, as opposed to having to select which plan, which spouse's plan is the most beneficial to them. That is also cost shifting to one employer away from another employer, and it tends to cost shift to the employer who offers the more generous plan. So in this way, they can bring the subsidy from each employer and purchase the plan that they want. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about those that are caught in between Medicaid eligibility and affordable private insurance. Those are the people that we've defined as people between 1 and 300% of the FPL. Those are people that even if you make, even if you have this connector, even if you offer the pre-tax benefit, even if you offer more affordable products, there's still just not that much money to go along towards paying towards health insurance, and they need some subsidy if they're not going to get it from their employer. So for those folks, and a lot of them work multiple part-time jobs, a lot of them are in that situation where they're not provided health insurance. It provides them with a subsidy towards private health insurance. And what we did in Massachusetts is we used this money that we had in the uncompensated care pool. So we redirected the money that was paying for just care when people showed up in emergency rooms, when people showed up in expensive care. It's redirecting that money and channeling it into subsidies for people that are under 300% of the FPL. The legislation provided that there'd be zero premiums for people under 100%, and then there'd be a sliding scale premium, which was just decided a couple of weeks ago by the connector board. One of the bullets says no cliff. I would temper that a bit and say that it's less of a cliff than Medicaid. There's still going to be a cliff if you're at 300% of the FPL and you're being subsidized, and then you go off and you're not subsidized anymore. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is that we also expanded our SCHIP program to 300% of the FPL. So if you're under 300, your kids are covered by SCHIP, and you're getting a subsidy. If you're over 300, you fall off a little bit because you're also going to be responsible for your kids. But at that income level, most people are offered subsidized health insurance at a pretty generous level in Massachusetts anyway. And so I don't think the cliff will be huge. The insurance will be offered through the private managed care organizations that are operating in the state. So those are the four health maintenance organizations that provide health care now to the Medicaid population. We estimate that approximately 200,000, that estimate's come down a little bit since our uninsured numbers have dropped, but we estimated back when this became law that approximately 200,000 individuals would be eligible, that the premium would be about $300 per individual, and that's a little higher than the affordable premiums because there's no deductibles allowed in this program, and that the state subsidy would be between 80 and 85% of the monthly premium. So over a transition period of 2 to 3 years, we're going to be transitioning dollars that currently go to providers to provide uncompensated care into a subsidy-based program, and that's a transition that is happening beginning in next fiscal year. These are the sliding scale premium assistance subsidies that were decided on by the Connector Board, which is a 10-member board. This slide just shows you the transition. We don't expect that when this is fully implemented, we won't have any uncompensated care because there's undocumented immigrants that will not be eligible for the program and others that will just simply not enroll in the program. And so we'll still have some uncompensated care, but we expect it to be much less than what we're experiencing now. The legislature gave the Connector about $25 million startup funds to get going, and a lot of that will be used for outreach, for public education. Recent focus groups have showed that people don't really know that it's going to be a requirement to have health insurance by July 1st, 2007, that they don't really know much about the plan that was passed by the legislature. So there's going to have to be a lot of education around what the current system is now and what the expectations are beginning in July. One of the big criticisms and questions that we always get is, now that you have this new program, why won't employers just drop health insurance? And that's something that the legislature included in their bill and was ultimately passed, which are some requirements of employers. One is that we added to the bill some new provisions that would not allow discrimination among employees of an employer, so that they're not allowed to offer a different benefit to their management staff than to their janitorial or secretarial staff. They can't split their business up. So that will require employers to offer the same benefit. And because health insurance is such an important benefit, even more so now with the individual mandate, employers, we don't think, will drop in large numbers, and all our modeling shows that. Now, we could be wrong, and it could be that all of a sudden employers start dropping, and we'll have to monitor that. But there are a couple of other provisions that ensure that that not happen. One is that we have required all employers now to offer a Section 125 plan, all employers over 10 employees to offer a Section 125 plan to their employees. So at least they're making available that pre-tax benefit to their employees. That's what we're calling the employer mandate in Massachusetts. So employers are required to do something. They aren't required to pay into that Section 125 plan, although we hope that many will. That's not a requirement, but they have to set it up and they have to allow for that prepayment of the premium. We were very mindful of the potential for any ERISA challenges when we were crafting these employer responsibilities and worked with an ERISA attorney on some of these issues. Doesn't mean we're completely foul-proof against any kind of lawsuit, but we feel that we've worked with the employer community in Massachusetts and hope that that we can withstand a challenge if there is one. Let's see. Couple other employer responsibilities that were added into the legislation by the legislature. One is something that they all have nifty names. One's called the Free Rider Surcharge. This is a surcharge that will apply to employers who do not arrange for, so they don't set up that Section 125 plan for their employees, and then one or more of their employees uses care at a hospital, costly care at a hospital, they will be required to pay a portion of that bill. lot of HIPAA issues here, patient identification issues, and we're working with the attorneys to kind of work through all those details now. But basically, the basic idea is that if you didn't arrange for health insurance for your employees, doesn't mean they have to take it up, doesn't mean they have to sign up for the Section 125 plan, but you need to make it available. Otherwise, you could be liable for bills that they incur. Another section of the law required a spreading of this assessment that I spoke about earlier, this assessment that we've had on hospitals and on insurers and on employers that self-insure for some 20 years. Money that goes into the uncompensated care pool is matched by the feds and then is used for our uncompensated care. The only employers that were paying that were employers that were purchasing health insurance for their employees. If you opted out of paying for health insurance, you didn't get any assessment at all. So what the legislature decided to do was to spread that assessment across all employers, both those offering and covering their employees and those that don't. Through a lot of different negotiations and analyses, they came up with a figure of $295 per person, prorated. So if your employees are part-time, it'd be less. This is going to apply to employers who do not cover a portion of their employees, and this is how we determined what that was. This is called the fair share test, and this was decided through regulation and was just adopted a couple of weeks ago. So the test is a two-step test. If you're an employer with more than 10 employees, again, your take-up rate must be equal to or greater than 25%. So if you have 25% of your employees taking your health insurance, we're determining that you're contributing a reasonable amount, and that's why you're able to achieve a 25% take-up rate. Now, we know that some smaller employers may have trouble with this because they do the best they can. They offer maybe 50% subsidy, and they offer a reasonable plan, but they can't offer any more than that. And their employees may have access through a spouse to a more generous plan. They might have access to Medicaid. They might have for reasons that have nothing to do with that employer, they just may not be able to achieve the take-up rate of 25%. So the secondary test is if the business offers 33% of a premium coverage then to their individual employees, then they're also excluded from the test and considered to be making a fair and reasonable contribution. The reason we set these bars where they are is because we really felt that the intent of the legislation was to get employers who weren't paying into the uncompensated care pool, who weren't covering their employees at all, paying some assessment. And so you didn't want to penalize employers that were maybe small employers might be paying 40% or 25%. They were trying to pay something towards the health insurance, and they were actually paying towards that assessment. We didn't want to penalize them and have them hit double with this penalty and provide a disincentive for them to cover their employees at all and just drop out of the market. So that test has been passed through regulation and will go into place beginning October 1st. We also looked in this plan at addressing market stability. We added money. Many people today were talking about how Medicaid underpays. We actually added $270 million in rate increases for hospitals and docs over a three-year period. Those are going to be tied to pay-for-performance metrics beginning next fiscal year. But we actually added money into the system, so Medicaid wouldn't be underpaying as they have been in the past. Some of the buzz is around the individual mandate, what we've coined personal responsibility. Beginning in July of 2007, everyone will be required to have health insurance and to document it on their tax return the following year. There'll be enforcement mechanisms, and these, again, we're kind of don't know where to go here. We're drawing our own map because no one's really done this before in this country anyway. But first year out, they would lose their personal tax exemption. So it's a minor penalty, really, the first year out. We figure education and outreach won't have begun in earnest yet or won't have penetrated like it needs to. The second year out, it would actually be a penalty included of 50% of what an affordable insurance product would cost. So for tax year 2008, the penalty is more significant. We're hearing from a lot of people, there's a religious exemption here, and we're hearing about that. So the law does provide for some religious exemptions. There's also parts of the bill, which I won't go into detail here, that deal with cost containment strategies and efficiency. Our first effort was really to get everyone covered, to get that money out of the black box, to open it up and become more transparent of a system. We're now going to be working more towards these cost containment strategies. The law provides really some guidelines, but really success is going to depend on implementation. There's a lot of implementation issues here. The law was purposely made fairly broad and allowed for a lot of discretion through regulation. And so some of those fights have yet to be fought, but we're working towards implementing this judiciously. And it will really, it's really an experiment, and we'll see how it goes. Thank you.